The Chazanish used to, whenever he, Chazanish was very often, the Holy Chazanish, he was very often a Sandik. Very often, nearly every day he was a Sandik. And therefore I'm going to just pause this. It's a very difficult question. Very difficult question.
It's a muktam,
yeah. It's a very hard question, and it's not, it's a really, really hard question. There's also many people in Ponovich Yeshiva, when in Tavshin Chet, when the first, I can hear myself, when the government was set up, they didn't say Tachanun. Actually, I believe they even said Hallel. But after a couple of years, the of Etzel is not really geared towards Torah mitzvahs at all. On the contrary, at times, and we all live, I mean, many of us lived as we know what it's like. At times, you really feel that just being in that section of Klal Yisrael, there is a certain even animosity, and there's sometimes a real sinner, a real antagonism against Torah mitzvahs. So that's what he says, you know, we can't say Hallel anymore. You know, we found out that things were not exactly the way to where we hoped they were in Tavshin Ches. But it's a long discussion, because on the other hand, there's no doubt about it that it gives a certain... anybody who was around in those years, they all say that it's just, you know, after it's just, it gives us so much more, gives freedom, independence, and a certain sense of security and peace. But that's, I suppose, a discussion for another time. Okay. I heard a classic today. It's a real classic of Shlomo Zalman, but I just heard it today, so I want to just share with you. It's a classic. Are we honored to hear you later? Yeah.
If you want.
We absolutely do. We absolutely do. We're not. I want to tell. I heard this is a classic of Shlomo Zalman. I thought I knew all the stories of Shlomo Zalman, but I, yes, thank you. Yes, this is an absolute classic. Classic of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which I heard today. There was a widow, an almona, who lived in Sharei Chesed in Yerushalayim. And she lost her husband, and her job was she had to grow the local makolet, the local grocery. She had the local, and she was not young, and she was over the years she was losing her koiches a little bit, and she noticed that that whenever the delivery man, they shared the delivery early morning, there was a delivery van or lorry who delivered the milk and the what is it called again, the leben. The milk and the leban and what else? The cottage cheese and the
tnuva
and all that van that arrived. It's instead of just being dropped by the on the street where it normally is, and then she has to schlep it into the makolet. It was actually brought all the way right till the doorstep of the shop, and therefore it was much easier for her that she could actually just put it onto the shelves, which made it much easier for us. If, you know, in the young years when her husband was around and early, it wasn't a big deal. But now he would make such a difference that the delivery man that everything was delivered right, literally to the doorstep of the shop, as opposed to on the, what they normally tend to do by the, you know, by the curb of the street. And she was so grateful that the delivery man had done that. You know, first day this was like this, she was really grateful. Second day, third day, she was really grateful. She wanted to thank the delivery man that they make that effort. Oh, she comes a little bit later, 6 o'clock, whatever, 7 o'clock, and everything is really brought. It's such a huge difference to her. So she wants to thank the delivery lorry for doing that. So one morning she gets up especially early, and she sees the delivery man, this lorry, the drivers, they come, and they just literally, she was wants to go and thank them, but it's, as she's going towards them to thank, she's literally dumping by the curb, and they zoom off. That's so strange. So, you know, boxes can't fly. So how come that they deliver it on the curb, and yet when she comes normally, all the boxes, all the items, it's literally, how does this happen? So she'll wait on the side and see what happens. And she like, I just waited. And here comes 5 minutes later, comes Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the Poser Gadol, who was himself in his 60s already, or even more than that. He literally comes after that with a talis bag in his hand. And he was a Poser Gadol. Rabbi said, the Poser Gadol, the ultimate giant of the generation, the halachic giant of the generation. he doesn't see that it's too much bother for him or beneath his dignity. He puts his thousand tefillin on his hat, and he knows very well that the lady, she's a widow, she has no much. He takes literally the boxes and he slept, not knowing that she was watching him. He takes all the boxes and he puts it right outside the makolet. And he does that with one box, another box, another box. When everything is done, he walks off. And he didn't know that she was watching him. And he didn't do it once, he did it regularly. This was Reb Shlomo Zalman. It's just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable.
If his story is true,
it is.
If it's only story, it's a beautiful story.
It's
not a story.
It's a true story.
You saw it?
No, but I heard it from somebody.
You saw it.
I heard it today from somebody who heard it from somebody. Yeah. That. And, yeah. Okay. I believe it.
I believe anything.
Yeah. What?
I had a story that myself with Shlomo Zalman. I went to one sukkah and my parents stayed in a hotel, and I didn't want to sleep in a hotel. Where was the sukkah in the hotel? It was for sukkahs. So I saw Weitz, and one of them is now the head of the Menal of the
Seattle. Yitzchok Weitz.
His brother, saw his older brother,
Naftuli. Yeah, he's in America, yeah.
I saw them in Mershon the day before.
They're great nephews of Shlomo Zalman.
Yeah, so I said to them, where are you? Because we've done the Sassov. So he said, we're staying in Beit HaGam. So I said, can I sleep in Yitzchok? So he said, yeah. I knew them from Sassov. So I kind of stayed in the Ramallah. I walked an hour to Rehovot Pisgah to Beit HaGam. And I slept the first night in the sukkah. Second night, so it's for Eretz Yisrael, it's out Yontov. But for us, it was still Yontov. Second night, we are bringing our beds inside. And Meir Parosh walks in. Meir Parosh, I knew him from Sassov. And they're all like, Meir, so he said, take all your stuff out of Shlomo Zalman's coming. So we start taking the beds out again, trying to get dressed, and he walks in. And he sees that these are great nephews of him, the writers are great nephews. He sees that we're strapping beds. He said, no. He didn't let us continue to being anywhere. He says, he's going to go upstairs because the grandmother, he came to visit the grandmother, who was his brother's almana. So he said, no. He wouldn't ask to do any more work. And he went upstairs, and that's where he visited, the family's visited. And she has another sukkah, a convenient sukkah for the almana. And he made a bracha there. And afterwards, they made a big deal that there wasn't Chazanish Sukkah. That was the Sukkah for the Almon de Rebetzin. It wasn't Chazanish Sukkah. For the first time in his life, he made a bracha.
Non-Chazanish
Sukkah. So I had the story all my life, and I was a Talmud by Gakor Bernes Lewina, who was a Dayan in She'eris by Rabbi Zriel Ayabach. He told Rabbi Zriel Ayabach the story. He said, my father never made a bracha in a non-Chazanish Sukkah. But I remember at the time.
You remember. Very good. Okay. Rabbi said we're continuing. We're up to Simon Tov Kuf Nun Beis. And we're up to see if Yud Aleph, see if Yud. I always had a question on this Sif Yud. Im Chal Tisha B'Av Echol B'Shabbos. Rabbi say, if Tisha B'Av falls on Sunday, like this year. Tisha B'Av falling on Sunday, Matzah Shabbos Sunday. Oishachol b'Shabbos, all similar, that it falls on Shabbos, like it did, I believe, was it last year, 2 years ago? 2 years ago? That it falls on Shabbos, v'nit chelach Shabbos, and it's pushed off to Matzah Shabbos Sunday. So either way, we're talking about a case that you're actually fasting on Matzah Shabbos Sunday. Oichel, you eat basar, you eat meat, v'shoy siyayin, you drink wine, besudam afsekes, during the sudam afsekes, on Shabbos afternoon, shalosh suudois, humale al shulchonoi, and you bring on your table, afilu kesudas shloime, even like the meal of shloime, hamelech beis malchusa, during his kingdom, during his famous, extremely extravagant meals in his royal time, in his prime. You can eat anything you want during the Sudam of Sekes, which is on Shabbos afternoon during Shalosh Sudas. So the Sudam of Sekes, it goes zero restrictions. Go for it! A bit more meat, a bit more wine, just go for it! Sudam of Sekes, no restrictions. Don't sit down, don't have dried bread, don't have just plain water, go for wine, and no restrictions. Like Suda Shlomo HaMelech, based on Chusay. Miu, however, what the only restriction which we must be aware of is Miu Tzorich, Lahavsik Mevodyom, you have to ensure, of course, to stop during Bapashkia. So don't like go right until Nacht, don't go till Matzah Shabbos, because you must stop eating already by Shkia. So by Shkia you stop eating, but you don't do any Avelis Mephaisi, you don't sit down, you don't on the floor, you don't do any restrictions. I always to Sivkot Chav Gemle Mishnebu, Oichel Baso Yid Meat, Vaso Lim Noya Mimenu, you may not even have any restrictions, you may not even prevent yourself. Although you don't have to eat meat on Shabbos, become like nonetheless. If you every Shabbos you have meat, Shalashudas, you've got to have meat also this week, because otherwise it sounds like you're doing mourning, public mourning. But if you sometimes you do have meat, sometimes you don't have meat, all right, don't have. Vine after cause of Mechabek is Uda Shlomi Mikol Mokim Yeshiv Bidoi Nefesh Ola Inak Besimcha. Don't overly rejoice the matter. Lochen Lo Yeshiv Besud Chaveim. Still, don't do a party. It's just in terms of how much you eat. You have to eat a lot, but don't party. Besef B'Chol Shoy Choy. Like that, B'Chol Shoy it goes even more lenient. V'Dayt Lim Shirogel B'Kach B'Shabbos Lisa Tzudim Zuim Im Chaveiro V'Midyov Menya B'Shabbosu Harel Kavelis B'Chaveiro. No. If every Shabbos you got friends, if every Shabbos you party, then by all means, party. So you're quite right. It is not considered Sudam of Sekes. It's just that what would normally be the Sudam of Sekes, in other words, the last final meal before the fast, we're just learning now, there's no restrictions. You've got to eat something just for practical. Absolutely. You've got to eat something, otherwise you're going to go fasting 2 days. It's not absolutely. You're right. It is not a locha that you must eat. I suppose you're right in pointing this out, and that's what you're asking as well. It's not a lachik sudam of sekes, and there's no mitzvah to eat really. It's just that, as far as Shalashud is concerned, you've got to have 3 meals on Shabbos. Plus, it's a very practically good idea. If you don't eat on Shabbos afternoon, you're going to be fasting for, you know, much longer than you need to. So in practical terms, you're going to eat something. But you're right, you don't really, as far as the chesed shabbos is, there's no requirement to sudam of sekes. No, it's, you shouldn't.
You shouldn't have it.
Yeah. If you can avoid it, you should avoid it. Well, yeah. He says that if you can...
You've got 3 at home.
Yeah, then I suppose you should... Then you could. If you could, yeah, that's probably part of this B'chai Shoy that says that whatever normally the case is, you could continue doing the normal case as well. I was always bothered by this expression, Kesaudas Shleima Be'ez Malchusoy. What does that tell? If you want to tell me you can eat normally, so fine, shine, eat normally. What does that tell me already? What's Shlomo HaMelech got to do with it? Oh, I never thought of that. Very nice. Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash. So we're saying, very nice. I never thought of that. Very nice. What else could he mean? Yeah, I think it's the extravagance. It's the extravagance. Don't just eat for the sake of it to be satisfied and to go through the fast. Well, it doesn't mean that. It means Shlomo HaMelech, the Pasuk Melachim, tells us how extravagant his meal was. There was no lack of anything. The apostle tells us how much food there was. It's unprecedented. So much food. So expensive. There was everything there.
You had 1,000 wives, and each one was cooking like
for many people. Absolutely, yeah. And he had cooks, and he had a palace, and he had everything. You could just go for it. So what the apostle is telling us, don't refrain from anything. No, go for luxury, go for an extra good, go for everything. Sifyut Aleph. Misha kibbut alav tainas. Somebody who is accepting tainas on himself. Sheni v'chamishi kol yemoy sashona. People who decide to fast every Monday and Thursday. Every Monday and Thursday they fast. Every Monday and Thursday fast. Okay. He decided, I'm fasting every Monday and Thursday. You know there are people who do that? There are people who did that and do that. There's such a thing. And what happens is that the Monday that men are fast happens to be Erev Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is on Tuesday. And Monday is Erev Tisha B'Av. Then, what are you going to do? Can't fast for 2 days straight. So what are you going to do? Monday, Thursday, fast every week. Tuesday is Tisha B'Av. So what are you going to do? So, Yishal Nidroi, you should find the head, you should be Matzi the Neda, cancel the Neda, or alternatively, Yil V'Taniso V'Perea. You could borrow this fast, like eat on this, and eat on this Monday, and pay back another time. So, either way, Shulchan Aruch tells us, don't fast. What?
Why isn't that being over on this Neda?
Because it's Perea, this concept of Perea, you're live in Perea, you're going to pay back. So because you have no choice, you can't fast 14 hours, you can borrow and pay back. But listen what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, God has something else. We are going cost, we're going for a different approach, and that is a real chiddush. No. If it, Monday is your day that you normally fast, you've got to fast the Monday too. Just fast the Monday until after Mincha. For Oichel, Sudem Avsekes, and then you eat Sudem Avsekes, couldn't be Asher Shemes before it's actually Shkia. V'chenoyagin, and that's the minik. V'uadin, similarly also, Mishim is anetanes chaloyim, somebody who's got a fast because he had a bad dream, very bad dream, scary, bad dream, and he wants to fast on that day. So you fast on that Monday, all the way till after Mincha, then you break your fast, still light outside, and you eat until Shkia. So whether it is Tanas Chaloim any day of the week, or whether it is a Monday, Thursday, Monday that you normally would fast, you can't just fast until after Mincha, late afternoon, you break the fast, and then you eat Sudem Afsekes before the Shkia. Why is this an awesome Chiddush? Why is this an exceptionally large Chiddush? He hasn't fasted. Where do we find such a concept? If you break your fast 5 minutes before Nacht, you've wasted your whole fast. Yeah. Very, very poor performance. Very poor performance. Normally, if you fast, you make it through the fast. Good. If you break your fast, then all right. I suppose there's always a bit of an element of chsidus and prishus and tziguv and everything, but her fast doesn't go that every minute. You either fasted that day, you didn't. Yeah, there is a tilchatzos. There's a concept of tilchatzos. So here also we find it's an exceptional chiddush. We don't find this in every. We don't find this in a lot of places. Habayis says if you'd base enom and chino erev tisha b'av b'mincha koydim deikimoyed. We don't say tachanun on the day before tanis. Before tisha b'av ches av we do not recite tachanun because it's moyed. I remember hearing a shir. I believe you remember your days when you were bacha. I think I remember hearing a shir from Reb Shimshon Pinkus, no less, about this. Why is it called a moyed? Erev Tisha B'Av is called a moyed. Very interesting. But that's what it is. It's called a moyed because we're getting close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in times of tragedy. And that's why we don't say Tachanun on Ches Av. If Shabbos is Shabbos, indeed as this year, we don't say Tzitzkos Chu B'Mincha. Having said this, the mic is over.
Thank you for listening this week.
Oh,
I just wanted to dedicate the what I'm going to say for Refuah Shleima for my relation of mine, Zipporah Bas Sara. It's a long-term illness, so that's a shame, it should get better. So if you don't mind, I'm going to sort of go back 2 or 3 weeks to Seder night. I heard something which is absolutely wonderful from Rabbi Pesach Kroin, who I've been listening to for about 30 years now, so thereabouts. So I heard something wonderful. It's its own Peshat, and it's actually on Chagadja from right at the end of the Haggadah, which I don't know what it's like in your families, but most in Moshe is in my family, and sometimes I'm the only one left. Well, I mean, maybe not now, but it has been. You know, I'm the only one left. Everyone's fallen asleep already. But the truth is,
yes,
yeah, and So yeah, and the truth is because it's got a nice, not got a nice tune to it. If it didn't have a nice tune, I might have fallen asleep myself. I'm not sure, but anyway. So he says like this. He says, so he's basically asking the questions of why, you know, when, what does it sort of represent, and when was it instituted, you know, and what does it mean? So, and why is it at the end of the Seder? So all these sort of questions he's asked. So he says if you look at the Malbim and the Vilna Gaon's Haggadah, so they quote a Darshan, Avraham Beirish Flam. So he says the Haggadah, the Haggadah was written hundreds of years after the Korban by Sheni. So he says that people knew that there was, obviously they knew there was a period of 70 years between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. But he said, now we're hundreds of years after the Korban by Sheni, and Mashiach hasn't come yet. So people were giving up hope. So someone decided to write the Haggadah to be at the end of the Haggadah, to be sort of uplifting and to leave everyone on a high. So, actually, just a footnote, because I remember writing it down, so I tried to look out exactly when it first appeared in Haggadah, and apparently I could find on the internet, it first appeared in a printed Haggadah in Prague in 1590. So it's quite, yeah, I mean, very recent history. I mean, so someone, we don't know who, I don't think we know even who wrote the Haggadah, who wrote the Haggadah. So someone decided to write it, like I said, to be uplifting, and so we should finish the Haggadah on a high. So Rabbi Cohen actually gives his own Peshat. This is his own Peshat, that he gives it to the meaning of Haggadah. He connects it to a Pasuk in Tehillim Sadik, Pasuk Yud. Let's get this right. Yumei Shmerna Yiseinu Bahem Shivas Shana Shivin Shana Ve'im Begavu Rois Then Shmoinim Shana. So basic saying, the days of our years are 70 years, and with strength, maybe 80 years. So maybe a bit longer nowadays, I don't know. But generally, it's sort of, let's say 80 years. So he sort of connects that posuk to the actual Haggadah. And he says, so if we look at the Haggadah, right at the beginning, it says the father goes and he bought the goat for 2 zuzim. So he starts off by saying, so the father represents Hashem. The goat is Klal Yisrael, and the 2 zuzim, what are the 2 zuzim? The 2 zuzim are the two luchos. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have that connection with Klal Yisrael. He says, if you look at the Haggadah, Haggadah, there's 8 protagonists. There's sort of 8, I don't know what you call them, protagonist characters in the Haggadah. So he says, it's the cat, it's the dog, it's the stick, the fire, the water, the cow, the shoichit, and the malach hamavos. So if you look at them, they're 8 stages of life. So he's categorized it into 8 different decades of our lives. And he says if you look at the cat represents the first 10 years of our life, the first 10 years of a person's life. The cat, what's the cat? The cat's running all over the place. It's neither here or there. It's up and down. Breaking things probably, whatever. So it represents the child. A child's all over the place. It's going here, there, everywhere. There's no structure to his life. It's just, he's making a mess of the house, whatever. So he says, and then the next stage, we go to the dog, which is so that's the period of 10 to 20 years. He says, a dog, he makes a lot of noise. But it wants to be independent, you know. So it's a bit like a teenager, you know. It wants to make a, yeah, I know everything. It makes a lot of noise, and you know, it wants to be independent. Don't tell me what to do. Yeah. So, and then you get to the next stage, the stick. The stick is something which you sort of control. You know, you bring things in, you can push things away. So a stick is like an extension of the hand. It's very so it's a stage of life we make. Again, we make our most important decisions of our life. You know, who we marry. Usually, and that's the what parnasa, what field of profession we go into. So it's very much controlling what we want to do, and we leave out what we don't want to do. So, So then we get to the fire, which is the period between 30 and 40. It says the fire represents the warmth and love of the family. A person that's when a person really built up his family and he's expressed his love, his warmth and his closeness. He wants his family. And the water, he says, that's between 40 and 50. That sustains life. And he sustains his family. So we get to the next stage, which I'm in, between 50 and 60. So he says, the cow. So what does he say about the cow? The cow walks slowly. He starts slowing down. You know, the cow, he's a source of food. So it's just like a person at that stage, he's slowing down already. You know, he's realised he hasn't got the kayak that he used to have. But still he's able to support the family and he's a good role model. And they come to him for advice, and then we get to the shoichet. So the shoichet, usually a very pious person, he's a very respected individual, but he deals with death. That's his job. So a person between 60 and 70, also a very respected person by then, you know. But death is on the radar, you know. Okay, 60s to 70s, and then we get to the last stage, the Malach HaMaves, and as Rabbi Cohen says, nobody lives forever, so we have to realize, you know, that's between 70 and 80. So we get to the end of the Seder, and you might feel a bit, oh, it's over now. You feel a bit depressed, and we say Haggadah, but what does Haggadah represent? He says we shouldn't be depressed. We might be, because really, what comes after the Malach HaMaves is Tchiyas HaMeisim, and that's when we reconnect. We go back. We reconnect now to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So whatever stage you are in life, Hashem will always be with us. So it's okay. It's very, very good. Very nice story. Yeah. So.